Hi, I'm Liz Bobo. Welcome to Reflections on Life here at Howard Community College. We have a guest with us this morning. His name is Hector Garcia. He is the executive director of FIRN. That's the Foreign Information and Referral Network here in Howard County. They work with people who are not citizens of the United States and yet living in our community and working in our community and very active in our community. So this is an issue that is gaining more and more attention across the United States and beyond in European countries and other countries. We're here today not to argue for or against having a sizable, active immigrant community as we have here in Howard County, but rather to talk about what it really is so that we do not have misconceptions of what's going on with people in this community. And I can just tell you one thing, that if we did not have them, there would be a lot of jobs that would go not filled around the community. They play a very, very, very important part in making this the dynamic community and one of the most sought-after residences here in the United States. So, having said that, Hector, thank you for being here with us, and I look forward to our conversation. And I want to start by saying that having followed this issue for many years, FIRN was the first nonprofit in Howard County that I remember working with when I first went on the county council back in 1977, but they didn't come for a few years after that, and it was one of the first I worked with. So personally, as a resident of the county, I'm very grateful to you for what you do.
So
welcome. Tell us a little bit about it.
And thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
FIRN has been around, as you mentioned, for over 35 years. And we provide services to, our foreign-born community that range between interpreting, translating, immigration services, career development, support, for children at elementary schools with learning English, as well as information on referral and outreach.
What is happening and has happened since you've been in your position with the numbers of humans who you were working with in this capacity?
We have an incredible growth amongst our foreign-born population. The largest population in our county, it's of Asian descent. However, the largest growing population is the Hispanic population. So in Howard County, over 65,000 individuals are foreign-born.
My, that's quite a number, isn't it?
Yes, it's almost close to 25% of our population.
Mm-hmm. What are your greatest needs in helping the people of this community to be integrated as a part of the community?
Our greatest need is it's for capacity. There are two ways of looking at it. One is, helping the individuals integrate into our community, but also helping the individuals that are here already understanding, those cultural differences and those cultural needs. I will tell you that in my almost 8 years at FIRN, I have never seen such anxiety, fear, concern among our foreign-born population in terms of what's going to happen, tomorrow, or what happened yesterday, or what is the future going to bring. And it reflects all the way down to the children in school, that high level of anxiety and fear in terms of, what's going to happen to me, what's going to happen to my parents, because there's really not a clear expectation as to where we're going.
It must be particularly difficult for the children.
It is. It is. And, you have to think of a family which might have children that are American citizens, parents that are not, and for that family to not even have the ability to plan for tomorrow, not knowing what can happen, generates, a lot of anxiety and stress. The children at school don't perform as well, not knowing if they're going to come home and their parents are going to be gone. Mm-hmm. So it's a big issue, and it's a family issue, and it is a community issue.
I agree. It's a community issue that affects all of us, whether we know it or not, and whether we want to accept it or not. So what are the greatest needs of foreign-born people living here in Howard County, given that we are, it's important that we remember, we're one of the very wealthiest counties in the country, but there's more than wealth to meeting the needs, I believe.
I'm going to say that the needs are to be able to afford the immigration process in terms of being able to, what I call it, the immigration spectrum, in terms of being able to, you know, renew a green card, DACA, renew a work permit. There are costs associated with that that are federal costs. Becoming a citizen is extremely expensive, not only with federal fees, but the fees you pay for the individuals to prepare all your forms in order for those forms, you know, to be accepted. If you get denied because you did something wrong, you just don't go back to, you know, the bottom of the pile. You don't get a call saying, I'm sorry, you missed, you know, question 4A. You get denied, and that's it. So that's a huge issue. I think the other issue, it's how much more difficult forms that used to be 3-4 pages are now 15, and it costs money. So they get caught between, you know, do I come forward and follow this process, which I can't afford, or do I kind of hide or, you know, stay quiet and see what happens?
Is it going in the direction of becoming ever more difficult, or does it seem to have settled out now so there's a little bit of peace and quiet for these people, particularly the children?
No. Every day we're at the mercy of whatever new policy comes out from Homeland Security or USCIS. And, you know, a couple examples is right now we don't know where DACA sits. You know, people that have been here for years contributing to our economy, you know, contributing to our community are going to be allowed to be here. There's also the what we call TPS, which is, you know, temporary protection status, mm-hmm. that was given from individuals from different countries due to disasters or civil war and things of, you know, of that nature. That now, you know, the government is saying, well, there's not an earthquake anymore in Nicaragua. You know, you can't go back. But, you know, some of those individuals have been there all their lives. They might have come as children.
Have been here all their lives?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or they, you know, they came as children. They don't know going back to their country. And they've been receiving, you know, a protective status for many years. And now they find themselves, you know, not knowing what's going to happen.
If there were any one thing or two or three things that our community could do, and I'm going to say not in the financial support area, which I know mm-hmm. is very, very, very important, and you're mm-hmm. always trying to make ends meet, I know, that an average citizen of, I'm going to say, Howard County, although I know you serve beyond Howard County, may want to be aware of in order to be as good a neighbor as possible to these non-citizens who are living amongst us and working in so many ways in our community that I'm sure we're not even aware of it. I don't know that I'm phrasing this well. What state of mind, what frame of mind when we are in contact with these people, you know, how to be the best neighbors? That's what I want to ask. How to be the best neighbors we can be to these people and their children who are living under such unimaginable stress?
I think it boils down to understanding and compassion. I think we are compassionate people. I think we all, at some point in time, can relate to the immigrant population, either be it, you know, by our origin years ago, right? Or, you know, by communicating with, you know, our neighbor. But I think it's a matter of somehow being aware of the situation in terms of not only in our community, but as a country, And being able to realize what you just said, we might take for granted peace of mind on the weekends, since a work week can be stressful, but to realize what our foreign-born population is going through, from parents to children, to relatives, to how they might be treated at the mall or at church or when they meet their neighbor. So just a simple understanding and a little bit of compassion, can go a long, long way. And if, at the same time, they can provide any support, and we're not talking about financially, but establishing a little bit of communication and being there for your neighbor, regardless, of where your neighbor came from or what your neighbor looks like.
You mentioned DACA before. How many people in that category are here in our county?
We would estimate probably about close to 1,000. And that's because when you become part of that program, you have to provide all your information. We have people that are on the program that we kind of don't know that much about. But when I look at numbers in the schools, number in some of the vocational institutions and, Howard County Community College, we come close to that figure.
For average people who I think residents of Howard County, by and large, are more than accepting of this population, immigrant population in our county, there are some, of course, who don't want any immigrants at all, which is so funny when we look back at our own history, but nevertheless, there are some. But what is the best thing people could keep in mind to be as good a brother or sister, and I mean that in the whole human race sense, not blood brother and blood sister. What is the best thing we can do, other than we can obviously be supportive financially, which is important? But on the street, how being in restaurants with people, how is there any way, thing that we should keep in mind that could be most helpful to ease the pain that these people are going through?
Well, I'm going to say kindness and an appreciation. For example, if, I'm lucky enough that I know Spanish. So if I'm in a restaurant or I find myself anywhere where, I see either a foreign-born person or a Spanish-speaking individual, I would say gracias. Or if they don't speak Spanish, I will say I appreciate everything you do. And, I realize what you must be going through. And stay strong. Have hope. And just that little bit of kindness and appreciation as to their contribution and how well they do it, right, would go a long, long way.
Mm-hmm. What would a resident of Howard County do if they wanted in some way to reach out and help some of the members of the immigrant population?
Well, to this day, and you mentioned it, you're talking about, over 30 years ago that this is the only agency in the county. We are still the only agency in the county. So we do outreach. We encounter, folks with, sometimes extreme needs, a family that might be living in their car or might need some mental health assistance or access to health care. They're getting evicted because they didn't understand the lease. All that along with, immigration support. So it would be if they have an idea or if they have, anything to offer, be it volunteering or supporting, the foreign-born community in any way, it would be to simply send us an email.
And how would someone do that? How would they contact you?
It'll be as easy as info@fernonline.org.
info@fernonline.org.
That is correct. And they can say, we get, there are things. We actually have a pantry. Even though we're supported by the central kitchen in Howard County, the need is so immediate that we do collect canned goods.
And where do you do that?
We do that at Fern.
Mm-hmm. Which is, what's the address? Well, you have the email, the phone number, and the address.
Yeah, the phone number, it's 410-992-1923. Mm-hmm. And our address, it's 5999 Harper's Farm Road. And we are in suite 201, which is okay. In the second floor.
One of the reasons I asked you to come and join me this morning is because so many of my friends and my kids' friends are becoming increasingly aware of and I know everyone doesn't feel this way. I know there are anti-immigrant people, you know, living in our county, and that is the way it is, and hopefully there won't be very much of it. But I think they're increasingly aware of just, wow, you know, what must it be like to be living in this uncertainty and not knowing, you know, where you're going to be tonight, tomorrow night, in a week, in a year. It's my hope that people will reach out to you. And I want to thank you for what you do and the very modest way in which you do it. You know, there's no like, oh, look at me, you know, look at the good I'm doing on this earth. You're just such a quiet, gentle, but very, very forceful and compassionate human being. And I appreciate your doing what you do in the county I live in.
Thank you. And thank you for having me here. And thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Okay, you're welcome.
Looking for uncommon talent? Meet the grads of life. They're not the typical candidates you're used to, but they're exactly who your company needs. An ideal fit for entry-level positions, internships, and even mentorships. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn more. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
As I have mentioned in former episodes on the podcast, that when I prepare my reflections on life, I break them down into six categories. Reflections on home in Columbia, reflections on my grandson, Zach, reflections on Baltimore, my hometown, reflections on public policy in Maryland, reflections on public policy in the United States, and reflections on our planet beyond the U.S., and finally, reflections on the universe. So, for reflections on home, one of the things that caught my attention as I walked into the community college today is the exhibit on the Cohn sisters from Baltimore. I grew up in Baltimore. My mom was actually alive at the time the Cohn sisters were alive. They were major young philanthropists at the time that Matisse and artists of his generation were getting started. And they were great benefactors to those artists. And to see an exhibit on them right in the front of our community college now, when I used to, truth be told, hook school when I was in high school and cut across Wine and Park down by Johns Hopkins in Baltimore City and slip into the Baltimore Museum of Art during school hours to review some of the collections of the Cohn sisters. It just brings such a beautiful continuity of life to me to walk into this community college and see attention being given to those great benefactors. So for life in Columbia, my hometown, the only other thing I want to mention about life in Columbia at this time is very different. And that is when we look outside the windows of our home to the two ponds on one side and the other of our home that have been iced over now and covered with snow, we see various tracks from various little animals that are in the snow. It's interesting to think about how does an animal who's, we never see anything of an animal who left a mark when he or she tried to walk on the ice and fell through. So this instinct that they have of whether the current level of ice can support their bodies, and there are these little paths of footsteps that crisscross back and forth, and they are so beautiful to see from the second story window of our home. And then this week, we had a very special treat. Earlier in the week, when there was still white snow covering the ground, we had a big, beautiful red fox who was crossing back and forth across the yard, across the pond, forward, backward, again and again. And it was such a beautiful thing to observe here in our hometown of Columbia. Reflections on Zachary. I'm having increasingly experiences of people I know here in Colombia, or friends nearby, or people I don't know who come up to me when they see me in public and say, I want you to know that my husband has had heart surgery, or I want you to know that I have a sister who has breast cancer. And when I'm trying to figure out how I can possibly deal with the pain and suffering of seeing my relatives suffer, what comes to mind is your grandson, Zachary. And that happens to me at least a couple times a week. And it just brings such warmth to me to know that in that way, Zach is still very much alive in the lives of other people. And what a gift his life continues to be. Oh, reflections on Baltimore, my hometown. There have been quite a few articles in the paper this month about Baltimore. Some are troubling, and one is very, very uplifting and hopeful. The troubling ones are that one more time, we're going to tear down some of the public housing in Baltimore that provides at least some kind of shelter to the low-income people living there. We're going to raise those apartments, and we're going to build more high-rise, expensive condominiums. This is a trend that, if we don't do something to turn it around, is going to wind up being one of the most, I'm going to use the word, disgraceful intentional actions of increasing the gap between the wealthy and everyone else, which goes against everything that our country was supposedly to stand for. Another interesting thing that's happening in the city, the Baltimore Museum of Art and the Walters Art Gallery, two very good metropolitan museums, although they've eliminated their admission fees, they're experiencing big drops in attendance. And it's a puzzle to many of the people who know and follow the arts in Baltimore and beyond. You know, just what is it? Is it the attraction of other kinds of media where you can see the arts, all of which are positive? But it's something that someone is going to have to figure out a way to keep these two museums afloat. I have no ideas about it, but it's a very interesting thing to observe, and I trust we have the minds that will figure it out. The third thing about Baltimore that caught my attention this month is an issue of restorative justice. I don't know if that phrase means anything to you, but restorative justice is when something unjust has happened to a human being, and then something else is done to not compensate for, but to provide some balance, some restoration of justice to that person. The human being who came up with that phrase was Mahatma Gandhi. And when I had an opportunity to travel through India with his grandson a couple years ago, that was one of the main things he pointed out, Gandhi's attention to restorative justice. So right here in our own Baltimore, one of the Baltimore City Councilwomen, Ricky Spector, who's someone I knew when I was in legislative office, she was attacked and injured by some young people in Baltimore. And it got a lot of attention because of who she was and about how frightening and unjust it was. She did time in hospital, came out, sought these people out, these young people, has spent time with them, is getting them in programs where they can do things productive in their life. She didn't spend 1 minute in anger with these kids. She is working with them through one of the most poignant examples of restorative justice I have ever been aware of, including in my travels in India. And I found it just such a very uplifting thing to know is happening right nearby us. Reflections on public policy in our state, Maryland. There are two conflicting or diametrically opposed articles about the environment in our state. and the environmental issues are even more important in Maryland than they are in most states, because we are the stewards of the Chesapeake Bay, which is the largest, most productive estuary on our planet. And the bay has been in trouble due to pollution, et cetera. And the latest strong studies by scientists, world-renowned scientists, show that the Chesapeake Bay is finally improving and turning around in the quality of its water and in the quality and volume of sea life that is flourishing there. It still has a long way to go, but it's heading in the right direction now, and it's so important that we keep it going in that direction. But then on the other side of that, and this goes beyond Maryland, but there are studies that are being done that show that our rivers and therefore our bays are getting dangerously saltier. And a lot of it has to do with the way we're using salt on our roads and et cetera. So whereas the bay is turning around to a stage of improvement in one area, in another area, our rivers, which feed the bay, are becoming more and more detrimental because of excess salt going into the waters. Reflections on the U.S., public policy in the U.S. We're still waiting to see whether about 200,000 Salvadorans are going to be deported from our country. Looks like that's where we are headed. I don't see anything on the horizon that's going to turn it around. And it will be, to me, there may be some people who find it a good public policy move, but to me, it will be one of the darkest marks on the history of this country if we do deport those 200,000 people. In the world, in France, France is taking the lead on many progressive areas where the United States used to take the lead, and their president is now making an effort to have legislation passed in France that outlaws fake news, which when I read it, it sounds very fake news being that term that we hear a lot now coming from some of the public policy discussions going on in our own nation. So when I first read it, I thought, great, really, really good news that they're going to try to ban fake news. But then there has been a reminder from constitutional scholars that, wait a minute, we have the most effective constitution ever in the history of this planet, and it has withstood the test so strongly here in the United States of free speech and justice that to ban fake news would probably be seen as a violation of free speech doctrines, and so it didn't look quite so attractive as it did at first sight. And that's the way it is with so many things, right? We think we've come up with a good idea, but then we have to be careful that we're watching out for the whole. And finally, reflections on our universe. We have a really wonderful month ahead of us in February. We've had total lunar eclipse in January. That was very beautiful. And a second full moon in the month of January. But as we look on to February, we will see that Venus is going to be the star up in the skies, lining up with the thin crescent moon and with the evening stars and giving us a beautiful nighttime, brilliant show for us to watch right in our own skies. It's been good being with you. I look forward to being back for more discussions on reflections on our universe.